All right, just a few words to start with. I have two presentations prepared. The first one is rather short, just to remind everyone what's usability about and why do we do it. And the second one is introducing a new method that we developed and which we find very, very interesting. So let's get started. So, hi, my name is Carsten Skopin. I'm looking like this. I'm 30 years old. That makes me over 14, over 18, over 21, under 65. I'm a consultant. Beside that, I'm a lawyer. Also, I'm here to represent Tim Bosnick, who is the managing director of Servelius. And Servelius is located in Hamburg, which is there. And to go a bit nearer, there, and exactly there. Those are all the people, or some of the people, actually, working at Servelius. And what we're doing is mostly usability testing. And so we're getting to the question, why is usability important? Quite easily, because no one asked him or her, this happened. These are all icons from a web page, and maybe you can just try and see if you get the meaning of any one of them. To tell you the truth, I can only remember three of them as well. That's a shopping cart. That is supposed to be an address book. And that is supposed to be the sitemap. What else happens? Something like this. Something like this. Something like this, which is a desktop where all your usual work programs you can find. You can find your calendar if you know where it is. You can find mail program and so on, but not really very usable. And also what we get is this, which you might know, which is the iDrive from BMW, which has some very funny behaviors in different menus because, for example, you can push this button, you can tilt it, and you can turn it around, and not in all menus, if you do the same thing will happen in the menu. So, better you ask him and her, and then you get something like this, or this. But then, still we get the question, who are these users? So here we have Klaus, we have Marco, and we have Nina. Some more details about Klaus. Klaus is between 50 and 70 years old. He's married, and he has a rather higher education. He's very interested in the internet, mostly because he can communicate with his children. Other things he uses on the internet are search engines and online banking. As Klaus is rather conservative, security is something that's very important for him. And so in this case, he trusts in big, well-known companies. On the other hand, Klaus still does have some problems using the internet. For one thing, he still can't differentiate between the left mouse button and the right mouse button. Also, Klaus usually doesn't know where on his computer his text, photos, and music are. What he does know is what music he likes and what he's looking for. Also, Klaus doesn't know when he's searching for something that you can use quotation marks in the search field to make your search more accurate. Again, Klaus doesn't know what an address bar is good for because there's Google. And then, again, he doesn't know what's the difference between an email address and an URL. So that was Klaus. Now we have Marco, who's still a student, making him somewhere between 20 and 40 years old. Most of the people represented by Marco are male, single, also have a higher education like Klaus. Marco is very techie almost all the time. He's online, downloads a lot of music from the internet, and On the other hand, the only reason he is with his provider is because he has a fast connection with his provider, and otherwise he doesn't really care about it, does not go to his homepage and does things there. So what can Marco do? Marco is very proficient. He knows about all there is to know about the internet. On the other hand, Marco is also an individualist. So he uses this, this, and this, which is all freeware. And apart from that, Marco also knows these three programs. The last one of which, if you don't know it, is Lazarus. And on the other hand, still Marco is honest, so he rather uses iTunes. Last one in the row is Nina. Nina is under 20 and still goes to school. She's also single. She can be male or female. What she does on the internet is mostly for fun, only rarely doing research for school or other information projects. She uses the internet for email, chat, messengers. Doesn't really care what provider she's using, as she's still living at home and using the provider of her parents. So, some more details about Nina. Nina doesn't know what Skype is, but she does not really concerned with that because all she wants to do is talk with her girlfriends. But since you have to install Skype to talk with your girlfriends, and since she doesn't know how to install it, she asked her dad Klaus. And as we already know, Papa Klaus is also not really sufficient with installations either. So what we get is this. So we get to the point, why does all this happen to Klaus and Nina? Because something like this was done like this, 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 or this, while this would also have been sufficient. Just here all again. So, what has really changed in the past? Usability has in the past become more and more important because also with the development of the technology, the target groups have changed. Computers are not anymore built like in the 40s for experts, and they're also not limited to the workspace anymore. Rather, they look like this. They are commodity products. They are used by children as well as by elderly people. And they are not used in the office. They are used at home. They are used on the way, basically everywhere. So, what do we get else? Technologies got more complex. Target groups got more varied. Target groups don't get any training when they're using the products. Some target groups are rather inexperienced, and the user's demands are not always clear. And last but not least, types and places of usage are also more varied. So these are basically the reasons why usability consultation also during the development process is more and more important. So that was already the first part. Are there any questions about that? Seeing none. We can continue with the second one, which is a bit slower. This is about remote testing. As I already said, one method we developed in the last, about a year ago. How did it all start? For some years, we have been doing usability tests for Otto, which is one of the largest online shops in Germany. And what we did in the past is just basically normal usability lab tests. Problem with this is with such a large site as Otto, you can only cover certain areas of the site during the lab test or processes in the shop. And that leads to the assumption that you don't cover the whole customer experience which the customer should get while surfing on Otto. The next step after having just these singular lab tests was that we did seasonal testings. which means we do one test in spring and one test in fall. And so we have ongoing results from the same site, and we do the same task over and over again, so we get some measure of some measures which we can compare to each other and see if has anything got better or not. How we did this was that we recruited participants on the website, but then invited them still to come to our offices, to our labs, and we observed them still doing the same thing, basically buying something on the web page. That was better than just doing one usability test at a time. Still, there were a couple of open issues. For Otto, it was still not real enough because we still have the lab situation. We might have participants who are more there because they want to take part in the test, or they are there because of the money, and they are not there, or at that moment, they are not there because they want to buy something which interests Otto. And still, the number of participants is limited, and not all tasks can be done in the lab test. So, next step was that we developed the idea of a remote testing, which said, okay, we're not doing lab tests anymore, or at least to a lesser degree, and we're doing tests at home when people are in their natural environment. They're really involved because they are using the site right at that moment because they want to buy something, not because we tell them to. And so that's just what they want to do. So on the other hand, we don't want to go home to the people. We just want to look over their shoulder, basically, when they're doing all this. So the challenges were to develop a tool which does not require either the user to do anything on his computer, not install any programs, and also does not require the client to change anything on his website. Those are the most difficult challenges we had. Also, third one, we wanted not only to be able to ask people, how was it, what you did, are you happy with it, what problems did you have, but we also wanted to observe them. So we wanted really to be able to see what's on their monitor when they're doing this. What we came up in the end, we are still calling remote testing, and this is basically how it works. So we have the participants sitting at home at their computers using the web in the natural way they do it. Now they're surfing on the website, in this case otto.de, and they might get a layer where they're invited to take part in the test. Everything that this layer has to include is a link that the participant has to click on, and if he does that, then he is transferred, not surfing anymore on the website itself, but going through not really a proxy server, but it's basically like a proxy server. He does not have to make any proxy settings in his browser. It's just clicking on the link, but basically, it's working like a proxy. What we have as well is that we can have in the beginning or in the end surveys, questionnaires, also asking the participants, what are you doing right now? What is there something you're unhappy with, or is there something you're really happy with and which should also be covered in other sections the same way? That's done via a different server. Now we come into play. On the one hand, we get the data from the proxy server, which means we get the log files, and the log files, not only them, but also we can recreate screenshots from the actual situation when the user was using the site. And on the other hand, we get the answers from the user that they gave in the questionnaires. How do we really use remote testing? There's two ways. The first one is the critical incidence method, which is basically just telling you, the user, do whatever you wanted to do, carry on with what you were just doing, and whenever you want to tell us something, then click on one of these links, which is then at the bottom of the screen. So basically this is just two frames. The one frame is the original site, and we have a new frame here where the user at any time can click one of these buttons and give us feedback, or he can say, okay, I'm done, and then he will get to the questionnaire in the end. Just to show you how these feedback windows look like, first one is for positive feedback, so if the user likes something, he can first tell us where was he, what did he just do, what is it that he liked about it, and also we get some quantitative data using these simple scales. Negative feedback looks basically the same. Also, we're asking at what point were you and what happened to you that you didn't like, and what were your expectations, so what should have happened instead of that which did happen. The second method is task-oriented, and that is, users are not supposed to serve freely, but they are given a task via the second frame at the bottom, just here. So the task is just written here. In this example, it's the website from T-Online, and the task in this case is just you're interested in security software against viruses, worms, and so on. Please see if you can find any software on the website that does this. So at that point, the user will start and just carry on and see if he can solve the task. And once the user thinks that he is done, he can click on this button and say, okay, I'm finished, I've solved this task. Apart from that, we can also measure different things and see if the user is right. Has he really reached the end? Has he really succeeded in the task? Or does he only think he has and click the button in the wrong way? This can not only be used on static pages where you would say, okay, this is the final page, and when the user reaches this page, he has solved the task. Can also use this on dynamic pages, which is very useful, for example, for shopping processes, when you not only want to know does he succeed in buying something or not, but if he does not, you want to know at which stage does he not get any further. So we can track with this tool, does he manage to find the item he wants to buy, does he manage to put it in the shopping cart, does he then manage to find the checkout area, does he manage to put in his personal details, and finally, does he manage to send the order. What else do we get from the system? This is a screenshot which is created after the task. To limit the load on our service, the screenshots are not created during the test, but basically just the data for them is stored on the service, and overnight, when there's no load on the service, they will start creating the screenshots. And we're not only getting the screenshots here, but we're also measuring where is the mouse. Basically, we're really getting every single movement of the mouse. So once the mouse moves just one pixel, we have a JavaScript applet that sends a message to the server, okay, the mouse has just moved one pixel down or to the right or whatever. So we can see exactly where the mouse was at which time, where did he click. and so on. Coming back to the example of Otto, where which was also the first project where we used the remote testing on. First, the questions that Otto had that we were to answer. Most important to Otto was, how is Otto really used? Because Otto, they do a lot of tests, they have their own log files from their servers, but they don't or didn't really know what do users really do on the site. How do they browse, how do they search, how do they purchase? Second question was, which elements and functions are interesting for the user and stimulate their purchases, and which other functions are rather obstructing and move users away from the purchase, which is not, of course, in Otto's wish list. And last but not least, from the data we gather, what optimization measures can we derive from the insights? So, what did we do during the first test? We recruited 60 participants offline via a panel, and they were then asked to use Otto for 6 weeks, just like they would use it in the real life. Only difference, not via the live website, but via our remote system, which is changing the live website in a bit. We did not use tasks for this first test, but critical incidents. So all we got on data was when people wanted to tell us something, they did so. And as already just described, the remote system recorded everything that the participants did. And from this, we did gather quite a number of data and were really able to optimize the process. Second example, that was a test we did about a year ago and which we are just repeating at the moment. From another client, they have a big portal and they also have a search engine on their portal, and they wanted to know, is our search engine better than from our competitors, or is it worse, and in which areas is it better or worse. So here what we did, we got a few more users, altogether 175. 75 of them got tasks to complete using three of the search interfaces. For example, one of the tasks was just using the normal search function. Another one was search for a picture. So there, the interesting thing was, do users know that there is a special picture search? And the third one was searching for a product. Then again, do users know the product search, or do they find it and use it? From this task-oriented method, we not only get qualitative data, as we get from the critical incidents, but also quantitative, which is, of course, important if you really want to compare different things to each other. You need data. In this example, Search A was our client, and we can see the success rate was 87%, which was in the middle between the others. What other data do we get from there? We can see how long does a search take, and we can also split this into different groups if we have them. Here we split it into frequent users and customers. And one other thing we get here is the image search. Actually, how many percent of the participants do use the image search? And on the other hand, how many are successful? Again, then also split for customers. One other thing we saw from the data, seeing the three search engines they used each time with three tasks, we gathered how often did participants use not only the basic search, but also the image search or the product search. And we see that 44% of all users never used either the image or the product search. This was just for our client. So it was seen that on his side, the image search is more or less hidden in such a way that almost half the participants didn't find it. Another test we did a couple of months ago was for T-Online again. They wanted to change their website, their homepage, and because they had changed it already, and what was resulting from the last change was that this left column, which is the news, got a lot less clicks, because the way it was before that is that this whole upper section was all news and big teasers, and that was reduced to this. And we had two other columns, not introduced, but getting more space on the website, and so they attracted more clicks. Of course, this was expected to happen, but not in such a dramatic way as it did. So T-Online wanted to get some clicks they lost in the news sections back there. So what they did is they made a couple of variants from the home page they gave to us, and we used the remote testing to see just a very simple task for the participants. Simply ask them, where on this web page would you click, and let them do that, and every green point or area is symbolizing where people did click. And so we had this for all three variants, used 1,000 participants per variant, and actually found out that one of the variants, which had a bit bigger pictures, here we see all the pictures are the same size, and it was, if you really put bigger pictures there, they attract more clicks, even significantly more clicks, which we ourselves did not expect, but it was a difference of almost 5%. That's just what I told you. And one other thing we're more or less setting up at the moment is one question which is very crucial for large internet portals is how do they fare, and how is their content assessed, how's their usability and design, and if they change something, does it get better or does it get worse? To be able to answer these questions, you have to do tests continuously, or at least in very regular intervals. So what we do on this side is we test it every month with 2,500 users. And here we use both tasks and critical incidents. 2,000 users get tasks. 40 of them are lined out, and from these we gather how does the success rate, for example, change over the time? Does it get better? Does it get worse? What changes were undertaken during or between the tests? 500 of the users do not get any tasks. They are only to report critical incidents. So this is rather to generate ideas for general optimization, to get feedback on the content of the site, is that better or not. Seeing the different methods, what kind of questions can we answer using the different methods? With critical incidents, we are getting mostly qualitative data, and we can see what does the user actually do on the site. And you're not only having now log files, but you can also say why the log files are like they are. From the task-oriented method, you get hard figures if you get enough users doing it. And you can have variance tested against each other. And one very interesting thing is you can benchmark against competitors, because since the remote testing does not have, there does not have to be any changes on the website, you can test all the websites you want. If AOL comes along and they want to test T-Online as well, that's no problem. From the general point of view, we generate log files. We can incorporate a quality control if we test over and over again. We can actually reach target groups which are usually hard to recruit, for example, B2B, which are users that, if you want to invite them to a lab test, are hard to find in the first place because they are usually spread over a large area and also very costly to invite to the lab. That's much easier done if you recruit them online and they can do it from home. Yes, some advantages of the remote testing against classic lab tests. You can have more users participating in the test, which means you can get or gather quantitative data as well. You can have more respondents participating in a rather short period of time, which you cannot have in the lab tests, even if you have simultaneous sessions going. You're not limited to the place where your labs are. You can have participants from all over the country. In some cases, you have studies where tests are also ongoing, where participants would have to come back to the lab for two or three times. If this can be done from home, this is much easier. And also, they are not in the lab. They are not. There's not a moderator sitting next to them, influencing them. They are just at home doing what they wanted to do in the first place. The feedback, first feedback we got from Otto was very nice for us, because they really said that using this method, it was really the first time that they really learned how their users use the shop, and now they can begin to understand how the website really works and in which way it should be changed to make it even better. On the other hand, there certainly are disadvantages over the lab tests. The most obvious disadvantage is that you can't put in any new questions. If the user gives you feedback, you cannot go back to him and say, "I don't understand this, please explain it to me," which you can do easily in a lab test. You have to live with what you get. Also, if you see during the session and the lab test, it's going somewhere else, but which is still interesting, the interviewer can just change his approach and follow along with the participant. Using remote test and remote testing, you're set on the piece you've programmed in the beginning. And also, what you don't get is any videos how the participant really reacts, what's his facial expression, which in many cases really does give a lot of information of how he feels. What we have found then is in not all cases, but in some cases, it's very useful to combine lab tests and remote testing. As in remote testing, you get the quantitative data, and using lab tests, you get more in-depth data, which complements the quantitative data very nicely. Also, if you use tasks or also critical incidents and problems are reported to you, you can use these reported problems to set up the lab test then and explore these problems in more depth. Some just one example of how an automated remote testing can look like. We get a scorecard, which is just showing a monthly testing and showing here the last 3 months and showing different numbers, how they've changed over the time. So project managers can very easily see where are the problems on the site, where do we have to work on and make it better. Yeah, that was that. Are there any questions about that? Yes.
How do you measure debug when the user gives up?
Measure what, please?
When the user gives up.
Well, you can also set timeouts for tasks. Or yeah, at some time the session will just run out, or we see it in the log files if the server records how long was the participant on the website. And if he spends half an hour for a search task, of course we know that this cannot really be true and this data will be eliminated. It's difficult to say where to make the cut, but yeah.
Are you also interested in quick streams? Which pages the customer went to? Or
on quick, what? What's
it like? It's called Clickstream.
Yes, we can gather these as well. We haven't really done a project with that yet, but we're still developing in that direction as well, yes. Also seeing from one step in a process what's the most likely way a user will continue. It's difficult. Depends also on the target group. If you just want to get the normal users of your website, you can recruit them easily from the website itself. In that case, you do need the participation of the website owner because you want to put a banner or layer. That again depends on how much traffic the website has. If you're having a large portal which has a couple of millions page impressions per month, that's no problem. If you have a website in B2B where you have just a couple of thousand page impressions per month, it's more difficult. At the moment we're just doing such a project and we are most likely not going to get all the number of participants we would like to have because we asked everyone and we wanted to reach 300 and only have 170 or something like that.
So we're just asking the users of the current website? You understand?
In that case, yes. We also do projects where we recruit participants with other methods. For example, using online panels. Which is not really the preferred way, but if for some websites there's no other way to get these users, especially if it's about new products or new services that are to be introduced.
Sorry for asking, but you know, still if you're testing some big portal or site with users, you also want to test the new users, so they don't know the current version. So you have to recruit the other.
What we usually do when the participants say they are willing to take part in the test before the test really starts, they get a questionnaire which contains some socio-demographic questions and also questions like how often have you already used it. You can gather some new users from there. on portals, usually it's enough. On other websites, again, it's could be that it's not enough. That would be a case where you would recruit probably some users on the website directly and some others in the users via a panel. Not really, because I wasn't really involved in that project. No, only
because I'm asking because you told us that theory was good, was better, but
okay, what we do know is that it got better after the test from the findings we gathered from the remote testing. Because, of course, Otto had data from before the changes, and they had the conversion rate, so how many users actually bought something. And then they incorporated the changes we derived from the results from the remote testing, and the conversion rate got significantly better. I'm sorry, I can't tell you what was changed because I wasn't involved in the project, but it was efficient.
Is it usual in the remote testing that one user will use it for one global payer, so you see those 6 weeks?
No, that's not usual. That was just because that was really the project when we developed the whole thing. It's the set for usually for 1 week. In some cases it has to be longer because we don't get enough use in 1 week. Can also be just, I think one project, the one with, where we tested the variants against each other was 1,000 users. Per variant, that was only online for 2 or 3 days because it was a large portal and a problem to find users.
Okay, so you said, if I understood correctly, you said you developed it for Otto, especially this week.
We developed it together with Otto.
Okay. What are the plans for the future? Or how big part of your business is it, for example, this method of testing?
Well, we started selling it about a year ago, and it's quite popular. We're selling it more and more. At the moment, we're in a situation where we sometimes have to deny taking offers because our partner who does the technical stuff, so who has the servers and who does the programming, is not fast enough and building up enough capacity.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning to offer some kind of free package for example, for open source projects or for something like that? If I was to do a testing of a site that is the NGO or it doesn't have the funds to hire you?
It's you can always ask if there's something in for us, like PR could be done. Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe I have for you two a little bit more general questions. When we are discussing this talk, you said that you might mention a little bit more about the impact of investment to those internal to usability testing, and for example, how does it increase business for your customers? And the second question for me would be if you can talk a little bit more, for example, about your company in general, since there is no company like Silver Use in the Czech Republic. So just a little bit more about the history or projects in general, how this company works.
Sure. Return on investment is, of course, difficult. The best example we have at the moment really is Otto, because we know how the conversion rate changed, and Otto told us in that case
the money they spend on us, on the test, it took them, after the changes, 3 days to earn the money back because of the raised conversion rate. That, of course, is a prime example of return on investment. Then, on the other hand, not all sites are shopping sites which aim on selling something. Still, you have to keep in mind if you're having a website which just wants to inform your users, if they go to your website, they are there to find information, and if they don't find it in a reasonable amount of time, which on the web is very short, they are very likely, if they're first-time users, to move away from your page again, and you've lost a potential customer. At the moment, I don't have any hard figures in my head knowing how much money it costs to have a happy customer on the web against how much it takes to in efforts and marketing efforts to regain him once you've lost him via the website. But yeah, nevertheless, everyone in the business argues that your investment will return, and just judging from our clients, they are certainly not less successful than before the tests. Okay, just a bit more about our company. SoValues is now 6 years old, 6 years in a month. It was founded by our still managing director, Tim Bosnick. Why did he found SoValues? He was working in a classical market research institute and was very involved in the web business and thought, okay, that's something where we might have an opportunity to earn some money. And so with the help of this classic market research company, SoValues was founded, and still two managing directors from that market research company also own parts of our company. Because of this liaison with this other company, we were in the happy situation that right from the beginning on, we got some clients and got to do projects, which enabled or which set us to also the very good situation that we were on earning money right from the start on. We then very early in the phase acquired the online as a customer, which is the biggest provider in Germany and who does a lot of tests each year. I don't know how it's at the moment, but I think it's somewhere between 40 and 60 lab tests we're doing per year for the online alone. So it was very fast that the company grew. It got started in May 2000 at home of our managing director. It just then took three months until they entered the first phase, and now our office is at somewhere above 700 square meters in Hamburg. We have just 1 month ago opened a subsidiary in Munich, which is very good for us because now we have some more space in Hamburg because some people moved from Hamburg to Munich and we can hire new people. And since also a bit more than a year, There is an international network of usability consulting firms, which is Circo from the United Kingdom, Accents from France, Usability Services from Spain, and UserCentric from the United States, and us, which is very useful for us because between 2 and 3 years ago, we got more and more projects that are done internationally. Right now, and this is also since about 1 year ago, we generate about 40% of our revenue with international tests, which are usually multi-country studies. Most of them in these five named countries where the partners are situated. Also, big market is Italy. We did some tests in Japan. And then we have single tests all over the world happening once or twice over again. So we tested in Brazil, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Egypt, in China, in Japan, I said, yeah. And last big step that we did was together with the American partner UserCentric, found another company, User Experience Limited, which is situated in Beijing and which is just up and running and will conduct the first test in 3 weeks. And with that, we're also the first usability company in mainland China. Yes. So it's still a growing market, and so you see, we're doing also tests in the Czech Republic. Not too many at the moment, but it's rather likely to get more. So there is the need for partners. At the moment, we have the situation to have some helping us out, but there's no real usability consulting company.
So one last question from me. So how the competition is in Germany in this field, and also, for example, how many companies in Germany?
There's quite a number of companies. Companies just doing usability testing is not that many, say somewhere between 10 and 20, most of which are not that really that big. We're clearly the biggest, and then there are two or three others that also have at least 10, 15 employees. With them, we usually get along without too many problems because there are no real conflicts in our clients, and we're not, in most cases, we're not competing over the same projects, because the second biggest company is doing a lot of work in the industrial sector, which we did one or two projects there, but not really much. We do some, or it's getting more in the medical sector. Competition is there in just the normal website business. There the competition is often with rather smaller companies, which are founded by universities together with some of their students, and that's often two or three people only. And well, our clients tell us that we do the better work, and so they don't get that many projects.